Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Monday, August 5th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. The body of a Sitka man whose boat sank on Thursday was returned to town over the weekend. 44-year-old John Reed was aboard the 20-foot fishing vessel Tanya Faith with two others on a fishing trip to Redfish Bay on southern Baranof Island. According to Alaska State Troopers, the boat overshot the bay and turned around. Rough waters swamped the drop bow style boat and it sank. One man aboard the boat, 46-year-old Dennis Monroe of Washington State, made it to shore and was picked up by a Good Samaritan vessel the next morning. On Saturday, Reed's body was found and returned to Sitka. On Sunday afternoon, the Associated Press reported that the Coast Guard had called off its search for the third man aboard the vessel, Fred Swenson, also of Washington State. A school board in Southeast Alaska meets Tuesday to decide whether the school in Tenneke Springs can stay open. The school faces closure after dropping below the state's minimum number of students. As KCAW's Ed Ronco reports, the situation in Tenneke might be particularly dire, but it's not unique.
Parents and school board members raised the alarm earlier this summer that the Tenneke school might have to close. In the past, the Chichagof Island community has been able to attract families and keep enrollment above the state's 10-student minimum, but at last check, the district was expecting just 5 students for the upcoming year. The state of Alaska itself doesn't close schools. That decision is up to each local school board, which in this case is the board for the Chatham School District. Scott Butterfield is the superintendent of schools.
They have a fabulous school. Fabulous community, outstanding students that have done academically not just average but better than average. So to lose that and the passion that the community has for their school is anything but easy.
Tenneke Springs has between 50 and 150 residents, depending on the season. The community is isolated with no roads in or out, and because of that, residents fear the closure of the school could deal a crippling blow to the community's economy and way of life.
I know the community wants us to be creative with our funding, and they've said they're willing to take substantially less money to keep it open. But as a district, I'm not sure that we have the funds to make that happen.
There are correspondence courses available for students in communities with no school, but some families in Tenneke say they'll have to move if the building closes. Low enrollment issues are not limited to Tenneke. In Port Alexander, school is scheduled to open as usual this fall, but concerns persisted all summer about low enrollment. At last check, Port Alexander has 9 students committed and a few maybes in the wings. But for a community, whether it's Tenneke Springs or Port Alexander, the school is more than that.
Well, for Port Alexander, the school is really the center of our community.
Molly Kimsey has a first-grade son. She says the school doubles as a community center.
They have activities every month that bring the community together, whether it's bingo or potlucks or science fairs or Battle of the Book competitions that they come and celebrate. There's always something going on.
Officials in Tenneke say the same is true there, that the school building is the epicenter of community life, especially in the winter. Gordon Chu is the chairman of the advisory school board in Tenneke Springs. It meets locally and makes recommendations to the regional board about a host of issues, which then votes. Chu wrote in an email that the local school board, the advisory board, is going over budgets, working with foreign exchange student providers, and trying to find alternatives to closing the building. The Chatham School District's regional school board meets at 6 p.m. on August 6th by teleconference to decide the fate of the Tenneke School. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Details on how to join the Chatham School District board meeting by phone are available with this report on our website, kcaw.org. Low enrollment is a problem in the community of Pelican, which has its own school district. We couldn't reach officials there, but the Associated Press reports that Pelican is expected to lose about a quarter of its state funding next year because it has fewer than 10 students enrolled. The deadline to get your name on the ballot for a local elected office this year has come and gone. 2 people are running for 2 open seats on the Sitka Assembly, and 2 are running for 1 seat on the Sitka School Board. For Assembly, the candidates are Aaron Swanson and Benjamin Miasato. They're running for the seats presently occupied by Tor Christensen and Michelle Putz. Neither of those two incumbents are running again. Both cite family and time commitments as a reason to not seek another term. For school board, there's one seat on the ballot this fall. Incumbent Lon Garrison is seeking re-election. He's facing a challenger from Stephen Courtright. As the municipal election draws closer, Raven News will offer more information on each of the candidates. The municipal election is October 1st. A celebration in the capital city called Equality for All centers around the recent Supreme Court's landmark reversal of the Defense of Marriage Act. As Lisa Fu reports, it's more than an awareness event for equal rights.
This is basically a giant wedding party.
Since DOMA was struck down in June by the U.S. Supreme Court allowing same-sex married couples equal treatment under federal law, Juneau resident Maureen Longworth has been celebrating and wants the rest of Juneau to join in.
It's a big deal.
Fellow event organizer Kimberly Crawford recognizes Alaska still has a long way to go.
Things are changing, but we still don't quite have the rights that we deserve yet, the full rights.
Longworth knows that change takes time. She and her partner, Lynn Davis, were one of several couples involved in a 1999 lawsuit against the state of Alaska, filed right after the state amended its constitution to define marriage as only between a man and a woman. The American Civil Liberties Union demanded the state offer domestic partner benefits to employees in same-sex relationships. 6 years later, the ACLU won the case. It was another 3 years before benefits were actually given.
It's been incremental change all the way along. And, you know, at this point, I really do envision being able to be equal, completely equal in our state. I'm not sure how long it's going to take.
Joshua Decker is interim executive director of ACLU Alaska. Since DOMA was reversed, he's been traveling around the state conducting informational sessions and having what he calls a happy conversation. Juneau is his next stop.
This is a new area of the law that same-sex couples are now being recognized under, and so it's important that Alaskans know what their rights are so that they're able to fully enjoy the benefits of being a citizen.
One example of these rights pertains to the military and federal government employees who've been married.
Civilian and military employees are now going to be eligible for all the spousal benefits in terms of health insurance, dental, life insurance. If you're a military service member, you'll be able to live on base. You'll be able to move off base with the spouse. You'll be able to get command-sponsored visas. It's the U.S. government fully recognizing the fact that those individuals are married.
Crawford is excited to hear about other rights and changes to law at the Equality for All celebration.
I think we're coming into a new age where people do realize that equal rights are just that. They're equal rights and that everyone deserves them.
Crawford says the recent Supreme Court decision is a big step forward and is optimistic more changes are to come. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
Authorities from several federal government departments will meet with Interior Alaska tribal leaders at a meeting this week in Fairbanks. The meeting is intended to communicate with tribal leaders about federal programs that can be used in their communities. Topics to be covered include rural economic development, land management, rural housing, rural utilities, and nutrition. Taking part will be officials from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Housing and Urban Development, Small Business Administration, Economic Development Administration, and the Department of Energy and the Denali Commission. The meeting will be Friday at the Westmark Hotel. Two native villages on Alaska's remote St. Lawrence Island are reporting their smallest walrus harvest in memory. Residents of Gamble and Savunga say people are hurting not just in the lack of walrus meat, but also in the lack of walrus tusks. With few employment opportunities, many in the two Yupik Eskimo communities are carvers who rely on money from the sale of ivory artwork. According to locals, the typical annual harvest of walrus based on a 10-year average is 675 animals for Gamble and 578 for Savunga. This year, Gamble residents harvested 108 walrus, with another 76 taken by Savunga. Gamble Tribal President Eddie Ungott said the two villages are working together on issuing a disaster declaration. Area state lawmakers are asking Governor Sean Parnell to monitor the situation. Fire has destroyed a historic gold dredge north of Fairbanks. Gold dredge number 3, across from the Chattanooga Lodge, was one of about 10 such mammoth placer mining machines remaining in interior Alaska. It was owned by the Fairbanks Exploration Company and began operating in 1935. Lodge owner Shirley Franklin said the fire began Saturday afternoon when two men came running in to say they accidentally started a fire when they pulled a pulley and apparently caused a spark. A cook at the lodge ran across the highway with a 5-gallon bucket of water, but by then it was too late. The wooden parts of the dredge smoldered into the evening. The Chugiak Volunteer Fire Department is getting a new fire station. Construction is underway on the $6 million Fire Station 35 near Fire Lake in Eagle River. The 10,000-square-foot building will have room for 5 firefighting and response vehicles, offices, a classroom, and will serve as the department's administration center. The previous Station 35 was closed in February of 2012 when it was deemed unsafe because of a deteriorating roof. The new station is expected to open next summer. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or you'd like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. Now here's a look at Sitka Zone weather. It's currently 57 degrees downtown Sitka, a little bit of fog and mist outside. Today you can experience areas of fog in the morning, rain diminishing in the afternoon, highs around 61, northwest wind 5 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with isolated showers in the evening, lows around 55. Tuesday, mostly cloudy, highs 61 to 67. Wednesday, partly cloudy, highs 62 to 68 and light winds. And then Wednesday through Friday, mostly cloudy, lows around 54, highs around 65.